There's this very specific, very modern kind of heartbreak that I think only exists in crypto.
Oh, I think I know exactly where you're going with this.
It's not about the market crashing. It's much more annoying. So picture this. You're going to move some money. Maybe you're paying a friend back. Maybe you're trying to buy some NFT that everyone's talking about. You open your digital wallet. You feel all futuristic, very tech savvy. You type in the amount, let's say $20. You hit send, and then the screen flashes.
The dreaded confirmation screen.
Right. And it says the transaction fee is $50.
Which is more than double what you're even trying to send.
Exactly. It's insulting. It's like going to buy a pack of gum and the cashier says there's a $100 service charge just to open the register. It feels broken.
It's definitely a shock to the system,
Yep.
especially if you're coming from, Venmo or PayPal, where everything just feels free and instant. But that fee, as painful as it is, it isn't just a junk fee. It's not some middleman taking a cut for no reason. It's actually doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Well, that is our mission today. We're doing a deep dive into gas fees. We're working off a couple of really great sources, one practical module called Mastering Gas Fees, and a more technical lesson on the mechanics of blockchain gas fees. And honestly, my goal here is purely selfish. I want to understand the economics of this so I stop getting ripped off.
That is a very worthy goal. We could definitely get there.
We're going to cover why these prices bounce around like crazy. Seriously, why is it cheap one minute and insanely expensive the next? We've got this postage stamp analogy that finally makes sense of it. And we have some actual math and strategies to keep more money in your pocket.
And I'd add that once you get the mechanics, the why, the how much starts to feel a little less like robbery and a bit more like, well, a toll road during rush hour.
A very, very expensive toll road. But okay, let's start with the basics. The source material really leans on this analogy of a postage stamp.
It's a classic for a reason. It holds up really well.
So if we strip away all the code and the hype, the blockchain is basically just a giant global postal service.
That's right. But instead of delivering letters, it's delivering value. It's delivering data. Now, in the real world, if you want to mail a letter, you have to buy a stamp. Why?
Because the postal service isn't a charity, they've got to pay for the truck, the mail carrier, the sorting facility.
Exactly. You're paying for the labor and the infrastructure to move your thing from point A to point B. And the blockchain is no different. It's not magic. It's a network of thousands of computers, we call them validators or miners, that have to process your data, verify it, and then store it on a ledger forever. That costs electricity. It costs hardware.
Okay, so gas is just the salary for the workers.
That's the first pillar, yeah, compensation. But here's where it gets interesting. If it was just about electricity and hardware, the fee would be like a fraction of a penny.
Right, because sending an email uses electricity, but that's basically free. So why does crypto sometimes cost $50?
Because of the second pillar, which is actually my favorite part of the economics here because it's so counterintuitive, spam prevention.
Spam prevention. How does charging me $50 stop spam?
Well, think about your email inbox. How many junk emails do you get a day?
Oh, too many. Hundreds. It's a mess.
And why is that? It's because it costs the spammer $0 to send a million emails. If sending an email costs just one penny a single cent, spammers would go bankrupt overnight. The whole model wouldn't work.
I see. So the fee acts like a firewall.
Precisely. If blockchain transactions were free, a bad actor could just write a script to send, I don't know, 10 billion dummy transactions in an hour. They could clog the network so badly that no one else could use it. It's called a denial of service attack. By attaching a cost, you make those attacks financially impossible. You price out the attackers.
That actually makes me hate the fee a tiny bit less. It's a security feature.
It keeps the network usable for the rest of us. Then you have the third pillar, which explains the crazy price swings. Prioritization. This is where the whole postage analogy gets really accurate.
Go on.
Okay, so the blockchain has limited space. Think of it like a mail truck that has room for exactly 1,000 letters and it leaves every 12 seconds. If 5,000 people want to mail a letter right now, who gets on that truck?
I'm guessing whoever pays the most.
Bingo. It's an auction. You're literally bidding for space on that truck. When we see those $50 fees, isn't because the electricity costs more. It's because everyone is on the curb shouting, pick me, and waving cash at the driver.
So it's just Uber search pricing for computer code.
That is exactly what it is. And finally, the fourth pillar is just resource allocation. We have to be able to tell the difference between a postcard and a grand piano.
Okay, that clears up the why, but I really want to get into the how, because sometimes I feel like I'm sending a postcard but paying for a grand piano. The source gives us a formula. Total fee equals gas used times gas price.
Simple algebra. But this is where people get tripped up, because those two variables, gas used and gas price, mean very, very different things.
Let's break them down. Gas used. In our analogy, this is the size and weight of the letter, right?
Yes, or in tech terms, it's the computational complexity. How many calculations does a computer have to run to finish your job?
Can you give me an example of a heavy letter versus a light one in crypto?
Sure. A light letter is a simple transfer. Alice sends one ETH to Bob. The network looks at it and goes, okay, deduct one from Alice, add one to Bob. Done. That requires 21,000 units of gas. Always. It's a flat rate.
It's like a standard envelope, always needs one stamp.
Exactly. But what if you're doing something complicated? Like, let's say you're swapping tokens on a decentralized exchange, or you're minting a complex NFT.
That's the grand piano.
That is the grand piano. The computer has to run a smart contract, check balances, execute logic, maybe talk to another contract. That might take 100,000 units of gas, or 500,000.
So gas used is basically just how much work does the computer do?
Correct. And you can't really change that number. The work is the work. The code is the code.
Okay, so if the work is constant, if sending ETH always takes 21,000 units, why does the final price change so much? Why is my fee $2 on Tuesday and $50 on Wednesday if the work is the same?
And that brings us to the second variable, gas price. This is the cost per unit of work.
The source mentions Gwei, which I gotta say, sounds like a character from Star
It
Wars.
does, doesn't it? It
Yeah.
just stands for gigaway. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of an Ethereum token. Think of it like cents or pennies.
Okay.
So let's go back to the car analogy for a second. This may be the best way to visualize this. The distance from your house to the grocery store is 5 miles. That's the gas used. It never changes. Your house doesn't move. The store doesn't move.
Right. 5 miles is 5 miles.
But the price of gasoline at the pump, that changes every single day. It depends on oil prices, supply, demand, all that stuff. That is the gas price.
That clicks. So when the network is busy, the price of the fuel itself just skyrockets.
Precisely. And because it's an auction system, when a ton of people are trying to drive at once, say during a huge NFT mint or a market crash where everyone is panic selling, the price per gallon or per gwei just goes vertical.
This leads right into the user experience. I mean, most wallets these days give you options. I usually see slow, standard, and fast.
Those are your bidding tiers.
I'm always so tempted to click slow to save a few bucks. But the source material has a warning about this. Is it dangerous to be cheap?
It's risky. Slow means you're basically telling the miners, hey, I'm offering less than the current market rate. If you have some extra space on the truck later, maybe throw me in.
But what if the truck never has extra space?
Then you sit in the mailbox,
Yeah.
well, indefinitely.
And that's the stuck transaction nightmare I've heard about.
Right. Your wallet just shows pending for hours, maybe days. And here's the worst part. You can't use those funds while they're pending. They're in limbo. The network has locked them up while it waits.
Can you cancel it?
You can, but, and this is the real irony, you have to pay another fee to cancel it. And you usually have to pay a higher fee than the original one just to get the miners to notice your cancellation request.
So trying to save 50 cents could end up costing you $10 in fix-it fees.
Exactly. It's stepping over dollars to pick up dimes. Unless you're very advanced and know how to read the network's waiting room, it's usually best to just trust the standard or fast setting.
Okay, let's talk strategy. The source material has this great section called Compare and Think. It's basically a case study on the cost of impatience.
The $15 versus the $1.50 question.
Yeah, let's paint the picture.
Yeah.
Situation A. It's Monday afternoon, US markets are open, a big crypto thing is happening. You check your wallet to send cash, the fee is $15.
Super high congestion, everyone's awake, trading, doing business.
Situation B. It's Sunday morning, maybe 6 a.m. The US is asleep, Europe is at lunch. You check the fee again, it's $1.50.
That's a 90% discount just for waiting.
It's insane that the exact same product, the transaction, costs 90% less depending on the time of day.
Well, think about Uber again. A ride at 2 a.m. on New Year's Eve costs 5 times more than a ride on a random Tuesday morning. It's the same car, same driver, same distance. But the demand is completely different.
So the strategy is don't take an Uber on New Year's Eve unless you absolutely have to.
Precisely. Patience is a legitimate financial strategy in crypto. if your transaction isn't urgent, if you're just moving funds to storage or paying a friend back, never do it during those Monday afternoon hours. Just wait for the Sunday morning lull.
Okay, there's another trap mentioned in the source that I think burns a lot of beginners, the small balance trap.
Oh, yes. This is painful. I call it the dust maker.
The source compares sending $10,000 in Bitcoin versus sending $5 in Ethereum. Let's say the fee is $5 for both.
Right. If you send 10 grand and pay $5, that fee is 0.05%. I mean, that's better than most credit card fees. It's nothing.
But if you're sending $5,
you pay $5 in fees. The recipient gets zero. You have just burned 100% of your money.
This blew my mind when I first realized it. The network doesn't care how much money I'm moving.
Not in the slightest. The miners don't care if you're moving $1 billion or $1. All they care about is the data size. The stamp costs the same.
This explains why I have like 5 different wallets with $12 of some random token in them that I literally can't touch.
We call that dust. It's money that's stranded because the cost to move it is higher than the value of the money itself.
So if I have $50 in crypto and the fee is 20, the strategic move is what? Just do nothing.
Do nothing. Leave it there. Wait for a massive market dip when fees drop to near zero, or wait until you accumulate more value. Do not burn 40% of your capital just to move it from one pocket to another.
Great. So far, we've mostly talked about Ethereum, which is kind of the main street of crypto. It's busy. It's expensive prime real estate. But the source material gives us a much wider landscape view. It's not all that expensive, right?
No, and that's probably the most important evolution in the last couple of years. We have alternatives. The ecosystem is much bigger now.
Let's run through the different price tags. First, Ethereum Layer 1.
The main highway. It's the most secure, has the most liquidity. But a simple transfer is usually $1 to $5. A complex smart contract interaction. I've seen it hit $100, $200 during peak mania.
Ouch. But then the source talks about layer twos. Things like Arbitrum, Optimism, Base. I hear these names all the time.
These are the game changers. Think of a layer two as a bus.
A bus.
Yes. On the Ethereum mainnet, everyone is driving their own private car. It's inefficient. It creates a traffic jam. Layer two networks bundle thousands of transactions together. They pack people onto a bus, and then they drive that one bus down the Ethereum highway at a single transaction.
So everyone on the bus splits the gas fee.
Exactly. Instead of paying $5 all by yourself, you pay like half a cent because you split that $5 with 1,000 other people.
The source lists fees for these networks at just pennies?
Often less than a dime. And you still get the security of Ethereum because the bus eventually parks on the Ethereum mainnet.
Then there's Solana. The source lists this as totally separate.
Solana is a different animal. It's built for raw speed. It can process thousands of transactions per second. So the fees there are fractions of a penny,
yep.
Like $0.00025.
That's basically free.
For all intents and purposes, yeah.
So if I'm a new user and I just want to play around, maybe buy my first NFT, swap some tokens just to learn, I should not be doing this on Ethereum mainnet.
Absolutely not. That's a very expensive education. Go to a layer two like Base or Arbitrum or go to Solana. You can make mistakes there that will cost you a penny, not $50.
That feels like a crucial tip. Now we're heading into the home stretch and I want to cover the practical survival guide. These are the gotchas. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one, the one that I think every single person hits once, is the native token problem.
The arcade token scenario.
Walk us through this because the logic is really weird if you're used to a bank.
Okay. Imagine you have a wallet. Inside, you've got $500 worth of a stablecoin, like USDC. Mm-hmm. It's basically digital dollars. You want to send that $500 to a friend.
I have money. I should be able to pay the fee from that money.
In a bank, yes. The bank would just deduct the fee from your transfer. But on a blockchain, the network doesn't know what USDC is. It doesn't care. The network, let's say it's Ethereum, only accepts its own native currency for fuel.
So I need ETH to move the USDC.
Correct. If you have $1 million in USDC but zero ETH in your wallet, you are functionally broke. You cannot move a dime.
It's like having a suitcase full of gold bars but no cash to pay the taxi driver. You're just stuck on the sidewalk.
That's a perfect analogy. The taxi driver doesn't want a little shaving of your gold bar. He wants cash. He wants the native currency of the city.
And this happens across all the chains, right?
Everywhere. On Solana, you need SOL to pay gas. On Bitcoin, you need BTC. On Polygon, you need Matic.
So the survival tip is always leave a reserve.
Never, ever hit the max button when you're sending your native token. If you have one ETH, do not send one ETH. Send 0.99. Always keep $10 or $20 worth of the native token in your wallet as a gas tank. If you run out, it is a huge pain to get more in there.
Because to get more in, you have to pay fees on another exchange to send it. It's a whole vicious cycle.
It is.
Yeah.
You end up spending $10 to get $5 into a wallet just to get the other money out.
One last practical tool the source mentions, gas trackers.
Oh, essential.
These are just websites, right?
Websites, browser extensions, yeah. Etherscan has a great gas tracker feature. There are specialized apps. It's like checking Google Maps for traffic before you leave the house. If the map is bright red, maybe, you know, pour another cup of coffee and wait an hour.
It prevents that shock of hitting send and seeing a huge number. You know before you even start.
Exactly. It gives you the power of information.
We've covered a lot of ground here. Let's recap the main takeaways for someone who wants to navigate this whole thing without going broke.
Sure. First, gas is the fuel of the network. It pays the workers, and it prevents spam attacks. It's annoying, but it's necessary for security.
Second, the price is an auction. It changes based on demand. If the network is busy on a Monday afternoon, you pay a premium. If it's quiet on a Sunday morning, you get a discount.
Third, use the right vehicle for the job. If you're moving small amounts, use a layer 2 or a cheap chain like Solana. Don't drive a semi-truck to go buy a quart of milk.
And finally, always keep a gas tank of the native token. Don't get stranded with a suitcase of gold and no taxi money.
That sums it up perfectly.
It really does change your perspective. Instead of seeing the fee as just money disappearing, you start to see it as a mechanism you can actually game. If you're smart about it, you pay less.
That's the difference between a tourist and a local in the crypto world. A local knows which roads to take and what time to drive.
Before we go, I want to leave everyone with a thought that came up in the self-check section of our sources. We've established that high fees secure the network, they pay miners, they stop spam.
Right. It's a feature, not a bug.
But here's the tension. If a network becomes so secure and so popular that the fees rise to $50 or $100, does it kind of fail at its original mission?
That is the big question.
If I can't send $5 to a friend without paying $5 in fees, is this really finance for everyone? Or have we just built a new system that only works for the rich?
It's the gentrification of the blockchain. If the rent gets too high, the regular people get priced out. And that is why layer 2s are so critical right now. They're the attempt to keep the neighborhood affordable while still living in the big city.
Something to chew on next time you're staring at that confirmation screen. Thanks for diving in with us.
See you next time.